Welcome to the Greener Way podcast, a show about people, planet, and purpose, and how investors and corporate leaders push forward in a complex world.
On today's episode, we're talking to the multi-hyphenate sustainability and responsible investment leader, Fiona Reynolds. Fiona, you practically need no introduction, so I'm not going to leave our audience waiting. But can you please talk a little bit about your portfolio of activities, particularly your role as chair of the UN Global Compact Australia, and introduce maybe a little bit about what the key priority for participants are?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Rachel. Well, let me start with the UN Global Compact. So while I was the CEO of the PRI when I was in London, I was on the global board of the United Nations Global Compact, which is headquartered in New York. And the UN Secretary General is the chair of the board and Paul Polman is the deputy chair. And for those who aren't familiar with the UN Global Compact, it's pretty similar as an organisation to the PRI, except that it's for business rather than for investors. Mm. And in fact, when the PRI was first established, it was established out of the UN Global Compact and it was incubated within that organisation until it could stand on its own two feet. Mm-hmm. But there was a recognition that whilst there was a global compact focusing on sustainability for corporations, you really needed the investor voice and shareholders of those businesses to help push the agenda, which is why the PRI was born. So when I returned to Australia 2 years ago, I was approached about becoming the chair of the UN GCNA, mm-hmm. So we're the Australian chapter of the UN's Corporate Sustainability Initiative. So the Global Compact is the largest corporate sustainability initiative in the world. It's got over 25,000 businesses globally as part of its network. And in Australia, we have just under 500 members. So that's corporations ranging from large ASX-listed companies to SMEs. We have four work streams that we focus on. So business and human rights, environment and climate, sustainable governance and the SDGs. But I'd say, as well as those work streams, in terms of current ESG trends and things that our members are really focused on in Australia at the moment, a lot around mandatory reporting, particularly around mandatory climate reporting, the rapid regulatory change that's happening in the country, the focus on greenwashing and the moves towards eliminating greenwashing, which is a good thing, but of course it's something that everybody's concerned about, that they're doing the right things. Mm-hmm. And the move from the energy transition to biodiversity and looking more at environmental issues. And then we also focus very heavily on the SDGs as well, and the need to unlock sustainable finance. Mm. So that's really the Global Compact. Some other things that I do, I chair Finance for Peace, which is based in Geneva. I'm on the board of the Australian Sustainable Finance Initiative. I'm the president of FAIR. I chair the ESG board for Qualitas, and I'm on the advisory board for ROC and for AIM. So that's sort of the portfolio of things that I do.
As we say, a multi-hyphenate leader.
Yeah, and I like to try and keep the mixture of local, but also keeping my international work going, which is fantastic.
It's so important to be grounded in both what's key for Australia specific in this marvelous country, but also where we fit in the global picture as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and I feel very fortunate that I've been able to come back to Australia but still be able to work internationally from Australia. Mm-hmm. It's not always easy, but it can be done. Yeah, last night I was up doing a call until 2 a.m. in the morning.
Well, and you turned around and have joined us for this conversation, Fiona. We are doubly grateful. I'm glad you touched on before the question of regulatory action around disclosure and regulatory and legislative focus on things like greenwashing, because while we are really in a very exciting year in terms of action from government and from regulators around sustainability-related disclosures, you recently wrote a piece that I thought was really important and made me stop and think for a little bit about having a broad agenda to embed the Sustainable Development Goals into action on climate rather than focusing on just that narrow picture of reporting. What does that mean if we're taking a broad view, particularly with an SDG lens? What would that mean for government, for business, and for investors?
So I made those comments when I was welcoming the launch of the Australian government's sustainable finance strategy, which is a great strategy, but it's very climate heavy. And my call was really not to forget the SDGs and not to forget that sustainability isn't all about climate. There is an S and there's a G in ESG. So when I think about the SDGs, I was really fortunate to be at the launch of the SDGs at the UN in New York in 2015. And the SDGs were announced with much hope, a really ambitious agenda designed to guide worldwide efforts focused on sustainable development through to 2030. They're really a shared blueprint for peace and prosperity for people in the planet now and into the future. And I like to think of them as like the world's business plan. So at the heart of the 17 SDGs, there's an urgent call for action by all countries, both developed and developing, and really to take a global partnership. They recognise that ending poverty and other deprivations must go hand in hand with strategies to improve health and education, reduce inequality and spur economic growth, all the while tackling climate change and working to preserve our oceans and forests. But when we look at where we are, we're just over the midway point of the SDGs because they're an agenda to 2030, a 15-year agenda. And on the implementation side, it's becoming increasingly apparent that substantial progress towards achieving these goals from all 193 member countries and many parts of the private sector, including investors and business, that have committed to them, that advancement of the SDGs has really been limited. So whilst we're really halfway there in terms of timeline, we're nowhere near halfway done in terms of action. In fact, as it currently stands, less than 20% of the 169 targets are on track to be met, and not one of the 17 SDGs will be achieved. And that really includes SDG 13, which is on climate action, and that still faces formidable obstacles, you know, despite the fact that it commands significant attention from both the private sector and governments. We know that the world will probably not stay to 1.5 degrees of warming, and we really have to be turning our efforts now to mitigation and adaptation issues. How do we live in a world that overshoots 1.5 degrees of warming? And I think if we don't really focus on mitigation and adaptation efforts, we're going to see more conflict across the globe. We're going to see more climate migration, more climate refugees due to water scarcity, crop failures, food insecurity, and the impacts of extreme weather events where more parts of the world are uninhabitable. So I think this really means that we have to be, I think governments, I think the community, we need to be more honest with people about the real cost of climate change, that it's not just about transforming our energy system. That's extremely important that we do that, and it's great to see that we're moving ahead, but it's not the beginning and the end of what we need to do. And so I think we need to be honest about what it means for global security, for immigration policy, for refugee policy, for human health and well-being. And we need to be much more holistic in how we tackle these issues. And as I said in my piece, I mean, it's not just about reporting. We have to have action. And, you know, I think the SDGs, as well as representing the world's business plan, I think they also represent an investment agenda and an opportunity to develop more physical infrastructure, including renewable energy, broadband access, health, education services, and help the not just the developed world, but the developing world to make the transitions that we need. Because when it comes to the SDGs, developing countries need $4 trillion per year. And that's up from $2.5 trillion in 2025 when the SDGs were launched because of a lack of action. We're also seeing that global foreign direct investment has fallen by 12%. Developing countries pay up to seven times more than developed countries to access international capital markets. And while allocation to renewables has tripled, which is fantastic, the lion's share is going to developed countries. And, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of these issues do not understand international borders. So unless we solve some of these problems for everyone, we're not going to solve them. Mm. So I'd really like the private sector to be thinking more holistically about the work that they're doing in sustainability and not think that it's just, I've ticked that box because I've reported. Mm-hmm. And what I worry about all of this regulatory focus is that we're now having this over-focus on reporting and ticking a box mm-hmm. rather than taking action.
Look, I so agree with you, which is why I was really struck by your piece when I read it for the first time. You know, to further that point along, Fiona, you know, one of the things I love about sustainability is this intersectionality. Look, you've said this implicitly in what we were just talking about before, but, you know, explicitly, what is the business case for having a really broad and intersectional view of sustainability challenges and opportunities? Like what's, as you say, the SDGs are the business plan for the world, but how do you, when you're working with your members at UNGCNA here, you know, make that case or work with them to embed those principles into their own business plans?
Yeah, well, at the broad level, I think there really are numerous benefits for business. And just to name a few, of course, there's enhanced reputation and brand loyalty. And we've seen in recent times how important that is. Mm. Also good risk management, of course, but innovation and market opportunities. How do we do things in a more sustainable way? Doesn't have to just be a cost. It can also be an opportunity, how we package things, what we eat, all of those kinds of things. I think it's also extremely important for attracting and retaining talent these days. Mm. For business, it's really important for access to capital. I think mm-hmm. investors want to see what you're doing in terms of sustainability. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the long-term viability and resilience of your business. And I think most importantly, your social license to operate. And I think a social license to operate has never been more important than it is today.
I'll look, and if any business doesn't think that it's important, there's a couple of there's a recent Four Corners episode with the CEOs of the supermarkets that would bring this very much into the forefront, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I think absolutely. And from the company perspective, I think a return on resource investment will always be key. Mm-hmm. But taking an intersectional approach is typically the quickest way to uncovering the high impact issues and their root causes. Mm. And with what we're seeing, however, is that companies looking to excel in different ESG demands are also now deploying dedicated expertise in those areas. Mm-hmm. So, for example, understanding how to safely engage with high-risk due diligence findings in the human rights space mm-hmm. requires significantly different skill sets to carbon accounting and reporting. Mm-hmm. So finding that right balance of subject matter, specific skill sets, as well as sort of general and high-level leadership that really can deploy resources is one of the biggest challenges in the ESG space now. But I think for companies, sort of gone are going to be the days where you just have this one sort of person who's got slapped with the sustainability ESG lens. Yep. You now need a human rights person. You need a climate person. You need an environment person. Mm-hmm. You need all of these different skills. Mm-hmm. But stepping back from it all, I think at its most simple to me, and it's always, I've always thought this, is it's really sustainability to me is about saying that it's not okay to make money by exploiting people or exploiting the planet, and that there's a better way to do things and there's a better way to do business. And that the 90s sort of Gordon Gekko years of making money at any cost are hopefully well and truly over. Mm. And we understand that all investment decisions and all business decisions have an impact and they're either positive or negative. And it's up to us to decide on which side of the line that we fall on this. Do we want to make a positive impact or do we want to continue and knowingly make negative impacts.
Mm, I so agree with you. And it's, look, I mean, you know, over the 12 years that I've been, you know, running what is now FS Sustainability, the expansion of where you would find that sustainability resource, you know, I remember that, I'm sure you do too, the days where, you know, the sustainability person was CSR and they were in the communications or the HR department, the unbundling and sort of the broadening of where you find sustainability people in a company has been one of the pleasurable things to see. And such a big challenge to appropriately upskill people so that they are mindful and feel confident and empowered across, you know, managing human rights, managing climate, managing, you know, community and social license to operate. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And a lot of these issues are very new as well. I mean, we haven't decarbonized the global economy before. So you're kind of trying to, you know, fly the plane and build it at the same time. So that's why I also think that the private sector does need to be cut a bit of slack as we learn about what we're doing along the way. So I'm all for that we don't have greenwashing, for example, of course, but I think people are still learning about what they're doing, and it's sort of a bit of trial by error is where we're still at.
I agree. Fiona, you know, you spoke before about having the pleasure of working in Australia, but being part of the international conversation as well. So how does Australia stack up on the global stage when it comes to acting on these challenges and opportunities?
So overall, I've been back in Australia for 2 years. I was in London, so working globally for nearly 10 years. Mm-hmm. I'd say in that time that Australia was not really seen as a major player when it came to sustainability. Mm. But I really think that's starting to change, particularly since the change of government, where we've sort of seen rapid and extensive action on sustainability. But we are still playing catch up. Having said that, though, we're now seeing Australian expertise in sustainable finance in demand, particularly across Asia. Mm. So I'm on the board of ASFI, the Australian Sustainable Finance Institute, and I know that they're highly sought after for their expertise for other countries in Asia that are starting to look at a sustainable finance roadmap, at a taxonomy, for example. And that's not to say that Australians don't do a lot of good work on engagement. If we look at organisations like ACSI working with Australian companies, they've obviously done a lot of good work in improving the sustainability of companies. But Australian investors do have an overweight position within Australian companies, so they sort of have to listen. But I do think that Australian investors need to engage more globally. And, you know, as we know, as more and more of the Australian's superannuation funds start to grow and grow and grow, and we've had all of this consolidation, more capital is going to have to go offshore.
Yes.
So more of our investments are going to have to be offshore. And we're going to need to make sure that we're stewards of those, of that capital as well, not just stewards of capital in Australia because we've got this big, you know, a shareholding. And I think there's a long way to go for that to be happening.
And it's an interesting opportunity with more super funds opening up overseas offices and, you know, staffing up to find, you know, that home for that long-term capital in overseas markets. I think we sometimes forget in Australia that superannuation is really quite a remarkable institution in terms of its governance and its outcomes.
Yeah. I also think that Australian funds could join with a lot more with other pension funds around the world. Mm. Of course, there's the tyranny of time zones, and there's the tyranny of, you know, distance and everything. But a lot's changed in the way that you can work and communicate over the last couple of years, in particular.
I agree. Well, look, as an international based in Australia, of course I would agree.
Yeah.
Fiona, what are going to be your key priorities for 2024, particularly with UNGCNA, but across your wider portfolio of work?
Well, if we look at UNGCNA for 2024, I suppose the first thing that we ask are for businesses to do no harm at a minimum, and then to collaborate to deliver the SDGs. Mm. So we'll continue with our work streams and providing really education opportunities on specific topics, particularly around transition planning, circularity, greenwashing, et cetera, to businesses. And I think we provide a really good opportunity to bring people together. As I said earlier, a lot of this is new. So it's really important that you have organisations that can be that pulling point, bringing people together in a safe space to collaborate and learn from each other. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I really love about the sustainability space, even on the investment side and on the corporation side, people are in competition with each other. Mm. But when it comes to sustainability, they still share information.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's really fantastic. So we're going to continue to support businesses really around ESG, mitigating ESG litigation risk, which is on the rise, trying to work with them to make sure that they're complying and not having problems with greenwashing, support business in their engagement with government, and, you know, working on the regulatory legislative response as well. Mm. So that sort of cross-sector collaboration is what we're focused on. I'll get a plug in for the fact that we've got our big conference coming up later in the year that will bring business together as well. And we haven't really had one of those. It'll be our Uniting Business Conference. It'll be in Sydney in October on the 30th and 31st.
Oh, brilliant.
And we'll focus on sustainability issues, that sort of intersectionality too between climate and other ESG issues. Mm-hmm. With my other hats on, well, Finance for Peace is all about how do we get money, how do we build the standards, how do we build the frameworks that would require, that would allow more investment to move into developing world to where it's actually needed, because money isn't going where it's needed to solve the SDGs. That's what we're building on. And then with a few of my other hats on, I'm the president of FAIR. So with FAIR, we're very much focused on the food and ag sector. And obviously that's becoming a much bigger priority for investors. And I think for Australian investors, it's going to obviously be food and ag is a big part of our economy. We have to be paying attention to these issues. And then I work with a couple of organisations like with Qualitas and ROC and AIM about how as organisations do we be better at sustainability? And I like working with organisations who say, hey, we might not be the best at this, but we're really committed to continuous improvements. We're really committed to trying to do more all of the time and learn all the time. And I really enjoy working with people who have that commitment.
I agree. Agreed. Look, I think that point particularly around FAIR, and that for listeners in the audience, that's fairr.org. If they'd like to check that out, we'll drop that link into the show notes. A particular, it's one of those interesting opportunities as well in terms of the importance of the Australian agricultural sector and an opportunity to continue to highlight the fact that Australia's agriculture is, you know, produce is among the finest in the world, and the opportunity to continue to be at that leading edge for it as well. It's one of those opportunity sets where it's taking care of risk, but also, you know, improving opportunities.
Yeah, but it's also one of those issues where we have to therefore really make sure that we're very aware of biodiversity. How do we make sure that as the climate's changing, that we're protecting our land, that the agriculture, the agricultural side of what we're producing is still appropriate for the climate as well, that we're protecting our water and that we're using it wisely, because we obviously know that water scarcity is going to happen. And also food security is extremely important in a climate-impacted world. Mm-hmm. And we see in Australia as well the farming community who some of them are obviously right behind climate action. They're right behind the fact that there's opportunities there for them. But on the other hand, we also see some in the regional communities, in the farming communities, who are protesting against renewable energy, not about renewable energy per se, but about, you know, that a lot of land is being taken up. So a lot of what they consider to be prime agricultural land taken up with solar panels, wind turbines, etc. So I think there's a lot of navigating about how we actually get all of this right.
And again, going back to the human as part of the climate. So a nice way to tie off where we started off from Fiona Reynolds, chair of the UN Global Compact Network Australia. Thank you so much for the benefit of your insights.
Well, thanks for having me, Rachel.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Greener Way podcast. If you liked today's show, remember to rate and review us on your podcast platform and make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Any feedback? Contact us on podcast@fssustainability.com.au. I'm Rachel Allen Backus.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability, a show about people, the planet, and investing in our collective future. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only.
The Greener Way podcast gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by discussing numerous financial sustainable options and our featured guests.
It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of The Greener Way are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances.
FS Sustainability operates under an Australian Financial Service License and the exemption made available under the Corporations Act 2001 in respect to any information or advice given. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement. And if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional.
For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.